I turned round to look back behind me like that there. And when I turned back round again, he was standing there.
Right beside you?
Just that's the first thing I mean, was the white head standing beside me. He just come forward and hit me there. Mm. And I went back in my house. When I come till again, I was over at the wire when I opened my eyes.
You were unconscious?
I must have been out a wee minute. I was down in my back. And he was on at my hips and my back and my leg, goring with his head.
He was goring you?
Oh, aye. And I was sliding down the wire. I was wondering what I was going to do. I was waiting, I didn't know, I couldn't get up. And every time I went, I was trying to grab the wire, but it was no good. He was pushing me on, and I was sliding.
What were you thinking at the time?
Well, to tell you the truth, what I was thinking at the time, I didn't know what to think. I thought the end was here. I says to the bull one time, I says, are you going to kill me?
You were talking to him as he was bearing down on you?
That's the only thing I says to him, is that he was at me down. And I says, are you going to kill me, sir?
And did you think you were going to die?
I thought I was going to die. Well, I thought that.
You thought you were a goner?
I thought I was a goner. If I had my foot on me or anything, I was dead. And I opened my eyes. And I mind seeing it. My welcome's up in the air. I've got them two fingers there, look, see, into the ring.
And you pulled?
I pulled. And I held him. I was exhausted. There was no breath. I was bad there out. I couldn't do no more. And what I thought I would do then was I'd phone. But then I discovered.
You were going to lie with the bull?
That's good to do.
And a grip?
Aye. And
with your fingers and his nose ring?
And howl him.
And would that have worked, do you think? Because he's a big animal.
Well, I think, what else could I do? I was afraid to let him go. But I discovered the phone was gone. The first knock he gave me, put the phone out of the pocket. Now, what time I lay, I don't know. It could have been 1 minute, 2 minutes. No, when you're lying in that situation, you don't know what time, how long you're down. So there's nothing else for it. Only walk backwards up the fence again with my hands, and walk on up and howl and lead him with me and keep on changing the fingers as they got sore. I got up to the trainer. I walked 20 yards, anyway.
With 800 kilos of bull.
But he could walk on best of you with the ring, And I held him there and climbed over the wire out onto the other field. And then I let him go. Could have been buried today.
I walked the hills when rain was falling, rested by a white oak tree, heard a lark sing high at evening, caught a moonbeam on the sea. Softly blow ye wind of morning.
Softly blow ye winds of morning. Lovely song.
I'd never tire.
Lovely soothing song.
And again, it seems to represent and encapsulate his love of nature,
yes.
The beauty of
yes.
where he came from, his unique part of
County
Armagh.
Right. Yeah, he was very, very close to nature. And he in Victoria Street, where he was born, there was a farmyard behind the house called, I think it was Donnelly's. And in the mornings, he used to hear, the rattle of the bucket of Donnelly calling in the cow to milk the cow. And he wrote a song called, or a poem called Katie Morning. A bucket rattles in a farmer's yard, and then the daily work begins anew,
and life's old hustle bustle fills the land. The world's alive, and there's so much to do.
Residents are out in their gardens tonight wondering what exactly happened and what the finer details are. Now, as I approach the car where the shooting happened, there's quite a bit of blood on the ground here. In fact, the blood is streaming the whole way down this very small hill. It's understood the man was getting out of the car when he was shot in both legs. One resident told me how he heard the shots being fired. He said they were very loud. It sounded like fireworks going off. He then came out of the house to see the man in absolute pain.
Just a couple of loud bangs just before 9 o'clock. Thought it was a car or something backfiring. I came out, all you heard was somebody up the top street there saying I've been shot, phone an ambulance. And that's it, but we're now at what? We're about what time here? We're at 10:15, there's not a policeman, not a cop in sight.
Did you move up the street at all to see anymore?
I went up to see, aye, and there was other people there as well, to help out, but...
What was the man saying?
The man wasn't saying anything.
No, just in pain.
He seemed to be unconscious or something, he was just... days laid back.
I've never heard shots as close to my life. I've always heard people getting shot, but I've never been so close.
It's 10:30 now, and the police have just arrived in cars and in a Land Rover here. They're about to put a cordon in place, and they're about to investigate, determine the facts about what happened here. They're circling this car now and looking inside the car with torches, and I imagine the forensic officers will also arrive at the scene. The police helicopter is now hovering above the Creggan area, but people still very worried about what's happening in their community.
I was standing on the street in Heidelberg one day waiting for a tram at 6 a.m. in the morning to teach some German his lesson before he went to work, and I knew I wouldn't be home till after 10 that night, and I thought, no, I didn't come here for this. But to be honest, I was standing there and I closed my eyes and I just felt the waves and the rocks around me from around the shoreline here at Inishowen, and thought, I need to go home.
When you came back, did you see Inishowen differently? Did it look different?
I perceived it differently, definitely. I have travelled a lot, and I think Inishowen has a particular beauty about it that I haven't seen anywhere else in the world, you know.
Do you think that comes out in your paintings as well?
I think it does, the energy of the landscape. It's what I've been looking at through my upbringing, and the energy of the landscape around me. You know, you kind of take it in, you absorb it.
But I want to ask you this now, Janet. I played this song many, many times, and I don't know if I ask you your opinion on this now. It's a song by Gene Pitney. You know what the song is. 24 Hours from Tulsa. Would you forgive him if he was yours? If he was your man, would you not forgive him? Oh, Janet. Oh, Janet. The critter's driving home. Now, I'm only putting his case to Janet. He's driving home, and he's a day away from you. He's a full 24 hours away from you, and he's tired. And he calls into a motel, and there's this old blade there. And she led him astray. She led him astray, Janet. The critter was vulnerable. And he didn't mean to. He was trying to get home to you, Janet. And he just, if he hadn't called into the motel, he was all right. Would you not take him in, Janet? Och. Janet says no. Och. It was her fault.
Darling, I had to write to say that I won't be home anymore.
I saw the car right about, and I said to my wife, if those boys don't come back, they're not going to get a grip on the cement. And I up screwed down my window and shouted, "You all right?" And the man shouted, "Phone the Coast Guard." And I got out of the car and I says, "No, phone the Coast Guard, phone the Coast Guard." And I phoned the service, is 999, and I got through the man head immediately, and I explained the situation. There's a car in the water and there's a family in it, and it's going to be sinking, and we need anybody and everybody as quick as you can. And there came a fellow along. I was talking to him, and he's over from Kerrykeel, and I says, "Can you swim?" And he says, "I can." And I says, please, and he stripped off to his underwear and headed out.
I just went and took off my clothes, down to my boxers, and then I just ran, jumped into the water, swam straight for the car. And then when I got out to the car, I was nearly there, and the driver's window was halfway open. The car was sideways facing me, and the driver of the car then started smashing the window with his elbow. And just when I got there, he put the window out, and then he went up onto the ledge. He came outside onto the ledge of the window. And he sat up and he passed me out. When I broke the window, I started shouting, "You need to get everybody out of the car. Get everybody out of the car now." And he just went and passed. The first thing he'd done was pass me the baby. So he passed me the baby, and I was holding the baby above the water. And I said, "Okay, everyone else needs to start getting out." And just as that was happening, his weight was sitting on the window. So the water at this stage was just on the ledge of it. And once his weight went on, the water just started gushing in. And the poor man was looking at me, and he tried to get the young fellow out then. So the young fellow was coming out, but the water was rushing in. And I grabbed the young fella's arm and I was pulling him, and I had the baby on one another hand, and I was holding the baby, making sure the baby was up as well, and I was pulling away. And next thing, the man looked at me and he looked back in, and the baby was screaming, so I don't know what he was saying. The water rushed in, and next thing he just looked at me and he said, "Save the baby," and he went back into his family, and the carriers went straight down.
Well, at the minute I'm finishing off an apron. My doctor had advised me to do something because I've been suffering with a bit of depression. And she's encouraged me to do things, so this is one of the things I came to do. I'm going to make my granddaughter a quilt. Well, it's a lovely thing to think that when I'm dead and gone in years to come, it'll be my granny made that quilt. That's, you know, the way I say it. And what we've been encouraged to do is take a piece of each of the child's clothing, a bit of daddy's shirt and a bit of mummy's, so the whole family's incorporated in the quilt. And we're all like children when we get it all done. You think we've got a bag of sweets. We're so excited that the finished product is done and we're all clapping one another. Because they're a great bunch of girls out there.
You're both sitting here, you're holding hands with each other. You can tell how close you are. Yeah. And one thing you said this week, Marie, and it really stayed with me, it's not the past when it happens to you. And when you, what does it mean to have someone like Sharon who can understand exactly what that must feel like?
It's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Because, I mean, she had a young brother of 18, which was a horrific death. But then my husband was 36 and I had 7 children. And that was equally as... So we've both suffered in silence all these years. And this book has brought a lot to the fore with my youngsters. I mean, they're all youngsters now, they're all adults, but they feel that this is starting to give them a lot of closure and and they love it talked about and threw out there.
And was this a friend you hadn't expected to find, Sharon?
No. When Carol asked us to meet, she asked me, did I want to know anything about Marie's background? And I said, no, I'm not going to judge anyone. I want to take her at face value. Marie walked into the room and I just felt, ugh, that's a wee mammy. And I just got up and hugged her. And just from that on, she just was like my mother. I just looked at her and thought, a mother's pain, a wife's pain. Aye. I just hugged her and it was just an instant connection, just because of pain.
Here is Tony McNamee down below us. He's going to launch another long throw-in here. These are very, very nervy moments now as this playoff comes to a climax. In goes the throw-in. Comes to McNulty. Damien McNulty drills in the cross. Banda was there at the near post. Limerick defender also. It's away. Back out towards McNulty. No, Banda! BT Banda has got the goal that will send Finn Harps surely up into the Premier Division. Unbridled joy around Finn Park as players and supporters celebrate an explosion of euphoria in the final minutes of extra time. And Banda's header has given Harps the lead, 2-1 in extra time. Incredible drama.
Well, that's a great header, Eric. The first one, McNulty does brilliant. He gets it down the line, whoops across on near post, and Banda nearly gets on the end of it there, but it's cleared out to McNulty again. He's not closed down, but he puts it on with more height this time. And Banda makes a run in between the centre halves, just flicks his header, and he gives Hall no chance of goal. It's a great header from a young man.
His third goal of the season, none more important. He might not score another more important goal for the rest of his career.
Derry four-piece making monsters are Emma Gallagher, Paul Monk, Brian Doherty and Gary Todd. Tomorrow they release their brand new EP, Bad Blood, and it represents a gear shift for the band, and it has already garnered them unprecedented attention. On Saturday afternoon, they play a gig at Trash, and the same night, they launch the EP in Sandino's. But before any of that, they called in last Saturday here to BBC Radio Foyle to record their first ever radio session. It was a lovely few hours with the band, in session for Electric Mainline. Making monsters.
Gwynedd Herbert, agus bei Gwynedd le clystail bea, an wach chugin gumlaish gal sweeter, tani ma vi an leinchen, a vi chal egg Gwynedd Herbert, agus bei si le clystail an ardan bea, chimarch shaw an wach vig shaw, an tachtula jig, emel farsta, incense sunflower. Well, album na shachtan a shaw. Is album Ure on Hjaltarog as Bahia na Brasilia Lucas Santana Sobran Watis e Diaz and Animatair an album We Sha Particulas de Amor.
Lived in Cheyenne Mills. I lived in Donegal, you know, and maybe you think we were a kind of, well, we weren't very much in the limelight in Donegal,
I understand. We were kind of city life, as it were.
We were kind of city life. Aye. We weren't like that. I went to a wee school, and sometimes we had to take turf with us.
Had you, Holly? Aye. Cheekers, that's a good one.
But then my father was very good for my father, you know, cut turf, and he gave the school a wee trailer load full, and that kept us going a good while.
God, that was powerful.
And then we had to go then to the well, and we had to bring a bucket of water. That was what we drunk.
Aye.
Aye.
And I'll tell you something, whenever we had to wash ourselves in the basin, and you washed halfway down, and then you washed halfway up, and it's as good as any shower.
Aye.
I'd like to see the young ones today, Holly, if they had to stand in a basin.
Had you a toilet in the house?
Holly, dear, would I tell you, love? You know, I think I was a genius, because we had an old dry toilet. And the men in Herdman's Mill used to go round with a horse and cart, you know, and clean the old dry toilets out. And you know, sooner sat in that flipping old sit, hey, but a ray of light came in on a big shovel. And that's the way it was. But them boys kept the place clean.
Oh, aye, they did.
And I'll tell you what, I think I was a genius, Holly, because I sat down one day, and you know the old newspaper they had there, the Irish News, and they had the Northern Whig was the two papers. And I used to sit and cut them into wee squares, and I put a hole through them.
Aye.
With a pair of scissors, and I put a wee string through them and put a nail up.
That was your toilet roll, then?
That was my toilet roll. Wee bit rough on the bum, but it was all right,
well,
you know.
There you are now.
Saturday passed. Our doorbell rang, and my young fella answered the door, and I heard the postman saying, "Parcel, take it or leave it." And my young fella, he's 11, and he came in, and his eyes were as wide as saucers. And he stood there in awe with a spot in his hand, you know. And we just erupted into laughter. It just brought so much to out of the house, a simple spud.
It's a good spud. It's a great spud. It's a spud you would love to bake.
Oh, yeah.
It's a fine baker. And the postage, look at the postage, £3.30.
£3.30.
You know, that could be the most expensive spud ever in Ireland.
And it was posted by a very frugal woman called Adele Johnson.
Right.
And she's normally very frugal now with her, very sensible with her money, but she splashed out on this spud.
She's a fine writer, addressed to the Bradley family. Yes. The name and address is given there. And I tell you what, you could use that spot, that stamp again, because they haven't put the black mark on it.
Yes, and I will be using it, Mark, because I'm replying with
return to sender.
I have to reply to this with a stake. So, and between us, we'll sort out some sort of a roast dinner between us.
Listen, there's a wee tender message at the back. Thank you so much for making our day so amazing. There's a lovely story here, isn't there?
There really is, Mark. You know, Adele has been living in England for a long time, and she decided to come back to Derry to get married with her partner, Jason French. And Ireland been synonymous with the spud. She decided she would have a spud theme at her wedding. But what? However...
Just stop there a minute. A few of the girls going, what did he say? So you got a bride, she's saying, right, I want my theme for the wedding to be...
Yeah.
Spuds.
Spuds, yeah. So she
not
buys...
Silver, not the forest spuds.
No, a good practical dairy woman. So she went and she bought 2 stone of spuds and decorated the city hotel with 2 stone of spuds.
Well, what was going through your head? Your brother was out cold beside you, but you were still conscious.
Pure panic, shock. As I say, it didn't cross my mind that he could be dead because I knew I was fine. So I thought with the alcohol, maybe he was hard to wake. I was trying to wake him up with no response. It wasn't until a few hours later in the station when they had told me that he was dead. I couldn't believe it. I thought it was so unlikely. I didn't think there was any chance that he could have lost his life. But however he did.
And what was that like, the moment that you were told that news? The fact that you were driving, you survived and he died?
Heartbreaking, horrible. everything was going through my head, thinking about, first of all, believing it, and then having to speak to my family, my 2 other brothers, my brother's then girlfriend, my parents. Just horrible, absolutely soul destroying. There's no words like.
And what did your parents say and your other brothers when you told them?
My brothers and my parents supported me. They tried to calm me down. They told me things were okay, and that, you know, and that they loved me, and that they didn't want to lose another son. Very hard, very very hard, beyond words.
And then, of course, you had the court appearance. You were formally charged and then had to appear before a court. Tell us about that experience.
The judge was understanding that it was my brother and that nobody wanted to see me go to prison. However, he had to give something as death was caused. The first relief came, actually, when I came to prison. Those 2 years leading up to that, I was in a very dark place. I'd contemplated suicide several times. Between alcohol and cannabis, different methods of coping. Coming into prison sobered me up, and the first relief came whenever I was sentenced.
If you haven't heard what's going on behind me, some people who know only too well exactly what Star Wars means are these super fans. Good morning!
Good morning.
We are in the middle of a lightsaber battle. I'm joined by Gavin Kelly from Strabane, Gemma Clark from Carndonagh, and the mysteriously named V, Ireland's only Star Wars V logger. I hope you can give us some lightsaber action there, guys. Oh. Wow. I hope you're picking that up. Gavin, on the scale of excitement as a Star Wars superfan, where are you at?
It's off the charts, Elaine, I think. It's getting ridiculous up here. Like, third time up, and it doesn't get any less exciting. It's something new to see every day. It's brilliant.
And you've been doing some absolutely cracking videos as well on your Twitter. You were up cutting turf with the lightsaber last night.
Had to cut some turf with the lightsaber, yeah. We've seen a lot of turf flying about. We had lightsabers, you know, it just made sense. It was just going that way. Had to be done.
Did you feel that he was just going to leap over?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what did you do?
I just grabbed him. The only thing I could do at that point was hold him, because what else could I do? Like, and I couldn't have talked to him because he was just frantic. Like, he was just so upset. It's the most horrible thing to see. It really is. And I wish that I didn't have to do it so much. And like, but I'm so glad of what's come of this, because it's got people talking. And people are talking about it now. Half the problem in Derry is that people don't talk about it. Mm-hmm. It's just, you feel that way, you feel that way. You know, you're supposed to be a man. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to be big and strong, and you're not allowed to cry. It's wrong. It's just wrong.
Can we clarify some things which I know have humoured you? People have suggested that elements of this story are made up, that Jane's not your real name. How does a 19-year-old woman stop a man jumping off a bridge? Jane, and I make the point in this interview absolutely clearly, you have been most modest about this on the phone. You have insisted that you don't be identified. We're not using your surname today. Mm-hmm. But just clarify some of those silly observations. And
well, I'm 5'10" and I weigh 17 stone.
Yes.
So, and
you were well capable of bear hugging this man.
Put in that situation, you'd do anything. I'll just say that.
So you just bear hugged him?
I just grabbed him. I just put my arms around him and held him there.
And what did he do about that?
He, at the start, it was actually an amazing thing at the same time, because at the start he was fighting and he didn't want to, you know, he was trying to get out. But then he kind of relaxed. And he started crying and like, but instead of being, it was a different type of crying, if you know what I mean. It was like a more of a calm,
like a relief, he'd found a safe pair of shoulders.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he just cried.
Let your thighs surround me, come and dumbfound me again. And loving you is sweeter, sweeter in the end. Loving you is sweeter, sweeter in the end. Loving you is sweeter, sweeter.
Our Krypton Sun and Loving You Is Sweeter, and that's going to be on a forthcoming album on Small Town America on the label. You're listening to The Art Show with me, Michael Bradley, broadcasting live from Small Town America, the label's recording studio, which is a kind of a secret bunker located. It's down near the city's emergency fuel stockpile. Kelly's Coal Yard. Yeah. Okay. I'm with the man who's, his idea this was, the man at the helm of it, Andrew Ferris, known to many people as well, of course, as a singer in his own right with Jet Plane Landing. But tonight you're wearing the record company boss hat.
That's it. I'm wearing my gold chains tonight.
2001, was it?
Yes. It seems like a long time ago.
It is a long time ago.
Yeah. So the whole idea around Small Town America in this building is a very simple one. We've traded under good music needs to be heard for a long time. And the thing that we're about is about community. Mm. We're a family organization. The bands and the musicians.
A happy family, Chris? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Chris McConaughey's smiling. Yeah.
Maybe sometimes slightly dysfunctional. But, and we exist on the periphery of, you know, what corporate or mainstream music's all about. And fundamentally, you know, I'm a Derry man and I'm punk rock at heart. And a lot of the music that we're hearing tonight may not sound like that. It's got that aesthetic.
So Claudia's just saying her goodbyes here. The last time for the unit. She's getting ready to go home. She's standing up now. Incredibly emotional here at the moment. A lot of tears being shed.
If you just want to walk through now.
Claudia's taking her first steps.
Thank you.
for an incredible moment. Clodagh's just getting in her car now. Ready for home. Thumbs up from the woman herself. Time to go home, Clodagh?
I can't even describe. When I was admitted, they asked me what did I want to achieve, and I said my goals were to walk out. It might not be graceful or elegant, and I've done that. It's the next step in what will be a long journey, but I can't wait to begin it.